Welcome to the Wedlake Bell Legal Podcast, covering a range of legal topics, including updates from our four practice groups: private client, real estate, business services, and dispute resolution.
Hello and welcome to the Wedlake Bell Legal Podcast to talk through some of the highlights in our quarterly property magazine for summer 2021 QIA. My name's Suzanne Gill and I'm a partner in the commercial property team, joined today by Rachel Fitzgerald, who's an associate in the property litigation team.
Hello Suzanne, thank you for having me.
Rachel, our resident agony uncle Ben Dunbar talks about reverse premiums to kick off the magazine. What particularly caught your eye about that article?
Thanks Suzanne. Yes, Ben's piece is really on trend, as many commercial tenants are restructuring and re-evaluating their need for space. However, as Ben explains, finding a tenant to take over a lease may not be as easy as it sounds, and with this comes the rise of reverse premiums in the market, where, rather than the incoming tenant making a payment to take over the lease, there is a payment by the outgoing tenant to get rid of the lease. Of course, the outgoing tenant may consider this worthwhile, as it may be making big savings by divesting itself of its long-term liabilities under the lease. An important word of caution from Ben. The outgoing tenant will be taking a credit risk on the incoming tenant, along with also guaranteeing its performance of the lease covenants. Because of this risk, parties sometimes enter into an agreement which requires the outgoing tenant to make payments in instalments, often upon proof that the assignee has paid its quarterly rent to the landlord. This can be attractive, particularly when it may not be necessary to disclose the details of any such agreement to the landlord.
One piece I noticed, which chimed with complaints that my clients are making, is Sarah Elliott's piece about the professional indemnity market. This is certainly having an impact on both developers and construction professionals. If cover gets more expensive, that feeds into what people charge to do their work. And of course, if you want to rely on the cover, if you need a collateral warranty because you're buying the building, lending money on it, or taking a lease of the building, you now really do have to read the small print. One trap Sarah came across recently was that a professional who had £5 million of cover had that cover not on an each and every claim basis, but on an aggregate basis. So if they had more than one claim, that £5 million really could get used up very quickly. This is a moving feast in terms of the market, so it is very much watch this space scenario.
Another topic which will chime with many and has become a bit of a buzzword when considering how landlords and tenants can work together to recover from the pandemic is that of turnover rents. As Jeff Rowson explains, the theory behind turnover rents is rather simple. The tenant pays a lower fixed annual rent, but in exchange it will also pay rent on a certain percentage of its turnover made from the premises above a given threshold. So far, so simple. However, the reality of negotiating a threshold rent can be anything but. Parties may disagree as to whether turnover should include online revenue, how to account for discounted goods, or if goods are sold on a credit arrangement, on what date are they considered sold for the turnover calculation. It is easy to see how so many elements are suddenly up for negotiation and how a lot of time and expense can be involved in documenting the turnover rent calculation. There is then the question of whether to pay the rent in arrears, based on the actual turnover, or in advance on the basis of an estimate that is then subject to a final reconciliation, like a service charge calculation. Once the parties get this far, there is also the possibility of a dispute if a landlord suspects that a tenant is deliberately underreporting the turnover figures to minimise the rent payable, potentially triggering the need for an audit of the tenant's accounts. It's clear, as Jeff comments, that although a turnover rent may be one possible solution for struggling tenants, it is also one that brings with it a lot of variables that need careful consideration.
Well, I have actually managed to write a piece myself in this issue of QIA, and it's on a matter which is really relevant to what so much of my clients are asking me about at the moment. That is, of course, break clauses. People are reviewing their office occupation in the light of COVID, and where they do have the flexibility to end a lease because they've got a break clause, they really are thinking very hard about using that. The thing about break clauses is that if they're subject to a precondition, you really do have to comply with that precondition very, very carefully, or the landlord can say the break clause is ineffective, and you could find that the lease carries on for 5 or even more years than that. My particular bugbear is finding a condition that the tenant gives back with vacant possession. In law, we've got two tests of what vacant possession is, one view from the tenant's perspective and one view from the landlord's perspective. Now, of course, the trouble with two tests is that if you ask two different questions, you quite likely get two different answers. One particularly acute example of this is the case where the tenant leaves nothing but a filing cabinet in its premises. At the end of the lease, if you give back the offices with just one filing cabinet with papers in it, have you given back the premises with vacant possession or not? You'll need to read the article to find out, I'm afraid, and of course that's the point of this podcast, to get you to turn back to the print issue or your email copy. Rachel, you were going to discuss our Backs to Basics piece on the Landlord and Tenant Act 1954.
Yes, a really helpful piece by Rebecca Stephen on the steps needed to prevent a tenant from acquiring the right to remain in a property at the expiry of its lease contractual term, known as excluding security of tenure. For landlords, it's important if they have future plans which require possession of the premises, say to redevelop or occupy themselves. As Rebecca explains, to prevent a tenant from acquiring security of tenure, the landlord must follow the statutory contracting out procedure, which involves serving a warning notice on the tenant before entering into an agreement for lease, or before the tenant enters into occupation. And the tenant must provide a sworn declaration confirming it understands that its lease will not be protected by the Act. If the warning notice is received at least 14 days before the grant of the lease, a simple declaration can be provided by the tenant, i.e. not sworn in front of an independent solicitor or Commissioner of Oaths. But in practice, this is less preferable, as parties do not want to wait 14 days to complete the transaction. The steps don't end with the tenant, as Rebecca explains. It is prudent for the contracting out process to be followed if there is a tenant guarantor before completion of the guarantee. Interestingly, the government is currently consulting on landlord and tenant reforms, so watch this space as the future may bring with it changes to the important contracting out rules.
Well, we all come across the 1954 Act again and again and again so often that it seems inevitable. But the one thing that is even more inevitable than the 54 Act is death. I've come across this in my own practice over the last few months, and I'm sure that many of our listeners will have as well. Someone dies unexpectedly, which of course has happened to far too many people over the last year, and although it's not often the thing at the top of everyone's mind, as property professionals you do get asked questions about what happens if your landlord, your neighbour or your tenant passes away. In my particular case, an adjoining landowner had agreed to help my client. The adjoining property was owned by a company, but this chap was the sole director and shareholder. When he died, my client still wanted the cooperation of the landowner, but it was a very difficult time to approach the widow of the gentleman in question. In this month's issue, we feature a piece from Jenny Cutts, who's a partner in our private client team, and she goes through some of the things that everyone really should be thinking about in terms of both a will and a power of attorney. No one likes thinking about their own demise or incapacity, but what we really can say is that it will make it much, much easier for your loved ones, as well as your landlords, if you've got a will and a power of attorney in place before they're needed.
Planning is at the fore of many employers' minds, with the question being asked what the future of office reoccupation will look like after the pandemic. The British Council of Office has published a briefing note on the future of the office, and in fact, Suzanne chaired the panel discussion when the note was launched. The panel focused on practical issues, both in the short term and the long term. The panel considered that in a sense, it's easier to adapt in the long term as buildings can be constructed with COVID protections in mind. Think touchless face recognition, security entry systems, wider hallways and lower lift occupancy. However, for now, work has been undertaken to adapt existing buildings with ventilation as one of the highest priorities. And while the panel didn't delve into the legal issues, Quarterly in Advance notes that seemingly straightforward works to improve ventilation brings with it the need for licenses to alter and the question of how to effectively approach the works in a multi-let building. Other legal issues to grapple with include the terms of employee contracts. Is there a geographical mobility clause requiring employees to work from home? Must a desk be provided for an employee at a certain location? Can managers successfully conquer the midweek mountain challenge, which would see offices deserted on Mondays and Fridays? For transaction lawyers, there is the rise of interest in the hub and spoke model, where alongside a hub, prestige head office, a company has spoke offices, which facilitate their remote employees. And this gives rise to a demand for quicker transactions for these fitted out spoke offices. For transaction lawyers, there is the rise of interest in the hub and spoke model, where alongside a hub, prestige head office, a company has spoke offices, which facilitate the remote employees. And this gives rise to a demand for quicker transactions for these fitted-out spoke offices. But not all companies will be large enough to support spokes, and its remote employees may wish to work in co-working spaces or local cafes and pubs. There are plenty of legal implications here, but perhaps the main ones to highlight are confidentiality and data security. Will logging on to the coffee shop Wi-Fi expose your business's network to the risk of hackers? Will the glass walls, so beloved of co-working spaces, mean that your hot new ideas are in the public realm before you get to copyrights and patents? It's safe to say that the speed at which employees adapted to home working at the start of the pandemic won't be matched by the speed of tackling these issues, as every building and business has its own set of requirements. The legal implications and advice follow from those and go far beyond the realm of landlord and tenant. One thing seemed clear to the panel, though. The office is here to stay.
Oh, thanks very much for joining me today, Rachel. I hope our discussion here has prompted our listeners to look in their inboxes for the summer issue of Quarterly in advance, or else to track down the relevant article on the Wedlake Bell website. Thank you to everyone for your time, and we do hope you'll listen out for the next Wedlake Bell podcast.
Thank you and goodbye.
You just listened to the Wedlake Bell Legal Podcast. If you liked our episode and want to know more, then check out our website, www.wedlakebell.com. Wedlake Bell. Building relationships is at the heart of everything we do.